I believe in my powers.
I believe in my powers.
I believe in the powers of my teammates.
I believe in the power of my teammates.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
Somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way.
Look, okay, just get any blunt objects together, all right? Get cornered, bash him in the head. That seems to work out.
Now, what are we, a team? No. We're a chemical mixture that makes chaos.
Gentlemen, I'm Agent Carter. I supervise all operations for this division.
The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
And
angels of love!
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show.
La piscine morte s'emparera de la chimichanga tout entière.
It's
beautiful!
We asked David to do the tagline in French. By we, I mean me.
We're classing it up because this is the Deadpool podcast.
Damn straight. Maximum effort. I'm Sean.
I'm David.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here obviously to talk about Deadpool, but before we get into talking about that wonderful movie, we have some stuff we'd like to plug, tell you about, things coming out. Mike has a book. David's got 9 books. Rachel possibly got a free kidney on the black market, that sort of thing. So,
shh, we weren't going to talk about that.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was a secret. So I would just mention my stuff, which will be super quick. One is that by the time this goes out, the first episode of Thrawn and On will be out, which is the podcast that Rachel and I are running with Kate Sherrod and Sarah Chorn, which is all about the Star Wars Expanded Universe. We're reading books, and it's fun. So that's great. And by this point, I think the first episode of a series of things I'm doing for authors, which is called Podcasting for Authors, that should come out, and there'll be more stuff. So you can look for that. So, David, what have you got?
Well, my latest novel, Curse of the Wolfen, just hit ebook the other week and will be appearing in hardcover before very long as well. And in March, The Last Wall, which is the first of my books for the Beast Arises series, will also be hitting the shelves.
Sweet. Awesome. Rachel, you're next, I believe.
So my happy news is that I now have an agent!
Yay!
Achievement unlocked!
Kerplop.
Yes, and my my agent is the amazing Dongwon Song at Morheim Literary Agency, and I'm super excited, and amazing things are about to happen.
Yay!
Yes.
Well done.
Okay, so now all the conversation you guys had about Dongwon now makes total sense.
Uh-huh.
Because I was super confused you were talking about a mythical figure.
He's not just a fictional literary agent that you pitch books with the same title as established books to.
Okay, good. All right, got it now. Okay. Well, congratulations, Rachel.
Thank you.
And Perfect. Mike, you've got some news as well.
Yeah, by the time this gets out, The Absconded Ambassador, which is the second Genronauts novella, will be out. Genronauts is my kind of fun science fiction series in novellas about a team that travels between dimensions to find and fix broken stories. So if you like the kind of media geekery that we do on the show, you may like it. And that is out in ebook, paperback, and audio coming March 1st.
Woo!
Yay!
Woo! Go you, Mike. That's your like 900th book. You're catching up to David.
8 total, but I probably will not catch David, and that's fine. David is amazing.
David is basically just blue shifting at this point as he writes books. Like,
I did the math the other day. I'm working on book number 21 right now.
Woo!
Oh my god, your books are legal to drink! Congratulations!
Everywhere!
You know, it's going to be really weird when you have more books published than you have years living on the planet.
Yeah, it'll be a while yet. Quite a while yet.
Like 5 more years. Come on.
Yeah. A couple more years.
I wish.
Anyway, so we're here, obviously, to talk about Deadpool, as we said before. So, before we get into that, Rachel has selected herself to be our resident summarizer for this movie. So, Rachel, take it away.
So, Deadpool is the greatest love story ever told, about a boy who meets a girl and then loses the girl. Well, doesn't really lose the girl, but fuck cancer. So, he's dumb and he leaves the girl, and then he goes off to a mutant torture lab and realizes that there are things that are worse than having every cancer known to man, and then basically becomes immortal and spends the rest of the movie chasing somebody named Francis so he can save the girl and get girl back again and with maximum effort. And there's also a character made entirely, a computer-generated character, X-Men, and the greatest of all X-Men characters, which is Negasonic Teenage Warhead. And they help.
You mean Colossus?
Yeah.
Two characters.
Yeah, no, he's the guy, he's made out of pixels. I mean, they're okay looking pixels. But Negasonic Teenage Warhead is the best.
Yeah, I love her character. She's fun. Also, her power is totally badass.
But yeah, so that's basically it's that basic story, but it's Deadpool. So there's fourth wall breaking and sometimes 16th wall breaking. It's very impressive. And he gets shot in the butt.
Oh my god, that's right. It goes right up in there.
Right up Main Street.
Yeah.
But I will report, I am disappointed that there was not actually a chimichanga in the movie.
True.
And
missed opportunity.
For our international listeners, I will briefly explain what a chimichanga is, since Deadpool mentions them. Chimichanga is a Tex-Mex dish that is a burrito, and it can be any kind of burrito that has been deep fried. And it's like heaven.
It is delicious. Deep fried.
Yes.
Yeah, they're really good. There are no chimichangas. Well, cool. All right, I think that's about as good as we can get to a summary for a movie that has no stable narrative and constantly breaks the fourth wall, as Rachel said, including in its own advertising, where it makes fun of its actors' actual attempts at being a superhero in another superhero universe. Which,
oh my god, every slam on Green Lantern is gold, is pure gold, and you're just like, bless you, Ryan Reynolds.
You know he was like, if we're gonna do this, like, we have to do those jokes.
Well, it's just, they leaned into it so hard. Again, maximum effort.
Yes!
They really did go for it. So, perfect. So, we're gonna start with general reactions to the film overall, and then we'll get into some of the specific stuff as we go through the conversation. So, Rachel, since you already summarized, I'm going to jump over you to David and we'll come back to you last with general reaction so you can get a break and your voice can recuperate so you can do your Deadpool accent later. David, what are your general thoughts about Deadpool?
My general thoughts were that I was highly entertained by it. At a stage when I feel like I'm generally hitting superhero exhaustion. And finding it increasingly difficult to feel like going to one of these films is anything more than a duty, than a pleasure. This was a pleasure. So I had a lot of fun with it. I feel that more could have been done with, the fourth wall that there are a number of instances of missed opportunities in the film, but by and large, I had a whale of a time.
Perfect. All right, Mike, what about you? General thoughts there.
Yeah, leading into the film, probably close to the end of last year, I wasn't super excited. I was kind of intrigued by Ryan Reynolds getting to play the character properly, as opposed to that abomination version of the character in Wolverine, whichever it was, the second
We're
one.
We're not talking about that.
Yeah.
Origins.
But sitting down and watching the film, like just in the beginning where all of the title credit names of the characters were actually snarky versions of their role. And you get different angles on kind of the kind of slow-mo swirling credit sequence, except as you discover it, you see like, oh, well, that's a shot of his crotch. And like, here's this totally ridiculous moment. And it takes the kind of ending swirl credits bit from Avengers Age of Ultron, puts it in the beginning and makes it a joke. And the density of jokes and the percentage of those jokes that landed for me was incredibly high. And I really respected the fact that they seemed to, for almost all the jokes for me, not quite all, but almost all the jokes, they used good judgment while also then going on a limb for things. So I was really overall impressed. I do think David's probably right about being able to do more with the fourth wall breaking. And there are a couple of other little bits that we'll probably get to, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, so I'm probably going to parrot a lot of stuff what you guys said, because to be honest, well, unlike you, Mike, I have been hoping for this movie to be good to come out since the very first instance when they said that they were going to treat Deadpool like that he was in the comics, and that they weren't going to pull any punches about Ryan Reynolds' past in filming. And I think the moment in which I knew this was probably going to be something special was when I first saw that poster of the side-by-side with Green Lantern and Deadpool and making fun of that whole thing. And I just knew that this has got to be something special in terms of what we're usually getting for superhero movies. So I overall I love almost every moment. I mean, there are a couple things we'll probably talk about where I felt like, they're kind of easy jokes or lazy jokes. There are other moments that this film was oddly touching at times, which shocked me given the character. I love the quirkiness. I just enjoyed myself. It's hard to say much more than that, that I went in hoping I would have a fun experience and I came out having had a blast. I'm also really happy that they went rated R with this, because I don't think it would have been as good if it was PG-13. I think there had been a lot of stuff that would have been sanitized, and this didn't. We got the rated R version, and it really works. It really does. I still think one of the funniest scenes in the movie is when they're talking. He goes to see TJ Miller's character after he's had his horrible operation, and TJ Miller basically gives these two great jokes about what his face looks like. Right, and the one is like one avocado having sex with an older, more rotten avocado, and the other is like it looks like a topographical map of Utah. Those are great lines. They're just genius. So, but you've seen those if you've seen the previews. So anyway, so that's kind of my general thoughts. So Rachel, what about you?
I loved it to pieces. I've already seen it twice. I basically knew that this was the movie I wanted it to be from the opening credits. When it gets to the part of starring God's perfect idiot.
Yep.
And, you know, what is it? Directed by an overpaid tool. Written by the real heroes of this movie. I was like, this is perfect. This is going to be everything that I want it to be. And it pretty much was. I was so full of squee. And I got to eat chimichangas when I watched it the first time because the Alamo Draft House is the best.
Nice.
Did they put like chimichangas like special on the menu?
Yes, they never have them except for the Deadpool opening night. They did a chimichanga special.
Because they like money.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, that is genius and wonderful.
Oh yes.
Did they call it like the Deadpool special?
I think they just called it the whole chimichanga.
Oh, okay. Works, that works. They probably can't call it the Deadpool special.
But it was actually, I've got the menu from it somewhere. It was actually printed on the back of a little Deadpool paper mask.
Right on.
Yeah.
The Alamo Draft House is wonderful. A+ to them.
Best place ever.
So in terms of what we may want to start talking about, I think maybe we should actually dig into those jokes, because all of us have mentioned, except of Rachel and her, she didn't mention it, but I know in person, Rachel and I have talked about some issues with the jokes. And we don't have to necessarily just talk about the issues, but there obviously were, almost all of us had said, right, there are jokes that hit, there were jokes that were less so. And I figure we should start there by talking about how the humor worked for us in the film. So I actually want to start with you, Rachel, because I know there's a specific joke you didn't like, but you also really enjoyed some of the others.
Yeah, well, I mean, I liked 99% of the jokes. Almost everything hit with me really well, and the one thing where I was like, really, why did you have to go here, is there's a character in it, Angel Dust, who her mutant power is that she's really, really super strong, and of course, because she is female, and she's extremely physically strong, Deadpool makes a joke about, oh, you must be a guy, I think I'm sensing some Wang, or something like that. And those kind of jokes are really, really transmisogynistic, to be honest. And I was just kind of like, why was this necessary? Because, yeah, Wade is an incredibly obnoxious person. I would not want to be friends with him in real life, but I love watching him. But you notice he doesn't really make any super racist jokes, at least not that I can recall. But obviously, it's also, you know, I'm white, so I'm not going to be as sensitive to this. But he doesn't even really make that many misogynistic jokes. It's just this one moment that was completely unnecessary, because there are a lot of other things he could have said to her that would have been equally obnoxious. And I also realized after thinking about it, I was like, it's gross enough when this happens in real life, because this is a misogynistic slur that's aimed at trans women because it's calling their existence as women into question, and that's not okay. And then you also hear this directed at, say, cis women athletes who are unusually strong because apparently women as a category can't be physically strong, which is dumb. So it's just a terrible joke from our context, and then in the context of X-Men, it's even more ridiculously stupid because they're fucking mutants. So yeah. It was just that one that really upset me because it was very transmisogynistic, and I was like, women can be strong, and why you gotta go there, and why you gotta be like, you're not a woman, because Wang! Meh.
Yeah, that's one of those jokes that I found, it was so lazy, I thought, was one of those, because it's sort of that joke that we've heard so many times, right? Like a woman who's acting too masculine, oh, well, they must have a penis. And it's just sort of like, these are jokes that, like, there are moments when this joke goes for the juvenile, that this film goes for the juvenile joke, and it makes sense. This is the one where I felt like we'd gone back to the 1990s, but not in a good way, just in this moment. But the counter to that, which I really love, was there's another point in the film, and I know other people have mentioned this, where he's fighting two women, and he stops in the middle of it, and he like questions himself, like, is it sexist for me to punch you? Right? These women are trying to kill him, presumably. Right? He says, is it sexist for me to punch you? Is it sexist if I don't punch you? Right? Yes. This really confusing moment, because, of course, if we're dealing with issues of equality, right, that's a kind of a big question that might be raised, right? Is what do we do in a situation when there's violence and you're not intentionally the perpetrator, I guess. Yeah. Mike?
Yeah, because to go kind of semi-spoilery, later on in the film, there is an extended action sequence between a man and a woman. And
yes,
for the most part, that sequence is played much more viscerally than in a lot of action films. A lot of films and TV shows withdraw from having a fight scene between a man and a woman. They basically, if there's a male protagonist, or if there's a female protagonist, there's going to be a female antagonist so the women can fight. This doesn't do that, and it takes a couple of moments within the fight to point at the fact that this is a man and a woman fighting, and their different expectations about what that means and what they can and can't do. So a film that does that, and that has the scene that you mentioned about, is it more sexist if I do or don't punch you, to then fail to self-edit and think of something better with regards to the transmisogynistic joke, I think is just a big disappointment.
Yeah, that's fair. I do like that last fight scene.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I didn't like, and I think it's just an issue I had with Colossus, which is like her breast gets exposed, and he does this whole like, oh, your boob is exposed, and he's like freaking out because it's a breast. And I kind of got the joke, but I just kind of felt like this is a little too camp for me. Yes, but maybe others would disagree, and I can see Mike already has a hand, so he wants to yell at me. So
no, I think something that a friend of mine brought up when they'd seen it yesterday and we were chatting was that he was thinking that the whole film is in Deadpool vision.
Oh.
Because Deadpool is the narrator, that the version of Colossus in the film is Deadpool narrating Colossus, which is why he's more goody-two-shoe and kind of very pronounced, kind of fakey-sounding Russian accent, that it's Deadpool narrating everything, because in the comics there's Deadpool vision in certain issues where other characters recognize that Deadpool has a different way of experiencing the universe. So I think that's one way of possibly framing the over-exaggerated aspects of the film.
That changes my view of it a lot.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because that makes a lot of sense, because I always felt like Colossus was a little ridiculous, mm-hmm. and campy, but if you think of it in terms of this is how, and given that that's how the narrative is told, right, because the very beginning scene is Deadpool kind of saying, like, this is like my story, and I'm going to talk about stuff. So that kind of makes sense now. Rachel, did you want to jump in here?
Oh, I kind of viewed it a little differently, mostly because I'm used to like the 90s cartoons, so I'm used to Colossus being that much of a Boy Scout, and I actually found it incredibly funny because it was basically him trying to do the, you know, this sort of being a gentleman. Oh no, the woman is exposed, and she was like, "Oh, that's really sweet," and then she punched him in the dick.
Yeah.
So it was kind of, it felt like almost a follow up of that, of the scene with Deadpool and the two women, where it's just, and it's not even her trying to use like her feminine wiles. It's him basically being like, "Oh, I can't handle the fact that you're a woman," and her going, "Okay, bam.
I'll use it against you." Yeah.
And I do, like,
yeah.
Oh, go ahead, David.
Oh, there was something funny in that scene too, in the, just, I guess, in the casting, right? Since that's Gina Carano, as Angel Dust. So the one member of the cast who actually could beat up the entire cast in real life,
yeah,
is up against a CG creature, right? So she's not even fighting someone who's there.
Oh, nice.
That is funny. Yeah. I do like that her character really holds her own against Colossus. Like, she,
yeah,
I think half that fight, he actually gets his ass beat.
Yeah.
Oh, he does.
Yeah. Which is really, really nice, just to see him get thrown into stuff. She's just manhandling him. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, because it takes the two of them really to beat her.
Yeah.
For the most part in that fight, which I think is really impressive. Are there other jokes that stood out to us, especially positive, maybe to balance it out?
Well, yeah. And actually, I was gonna, one last remark on the Angel Dust thing.
Okay,
I do,
yeah,
remember that in one of the trailers, right before that fight started with Colossus, in the trailer, Deadpool is like, "Oh, you know, you're too much man for me. That's why I brought him." But that's not what he says in the final edit of the movie. So they at least they caught that and changed that to something, you know, less really insulting to both trans women and cis women, to all women.
Did they maybe just alter it to you're too much for me? So that's why
I think
him?
He said you're too tough for me.
Yeah. Okay.
Is what I recall him saying in that, which I was kind of like, oh, that's nice, because
yeah,
was
that's a better,
like,
interpretation of the line too, because it just becomes more snarky, right? Because it's sort of like, I don't actually give a crap at you, but I have to take care of you in order for me to do what I came here to do. So,
well, and then it's that beautiful, you're too tough for me, so that's why I brought him. You're too tough for him, so that's why I brought her.
Fire chick. Cool thing.
David,
you haven't talked on the subject of jokes, so I'd like to jump you in here.
Well, yeah, I guess I'd very much in agreement with what everyone else has said. I think one of my favorite moments is when, you know, they're going to take him to see Professor Max. He's there. Which one, Patrick Stewart or Ewan McGregor? The timelines are so confusing.
Yes.
Which I was kind of nodding very happily there, having was going to be, you know, this close to checking out of those timelines. So I like that, and I guess I think, like, that was sort of, was one of the moments there where, which I guess on the one hand is one of the highlights for me, but also highlights where I wish it had gone further, with the fourth wall stuff. I guess in contradistinction to the jokes, which, we could have done without, there's some scenes where, it's like, why don't we have a joke here, right? I mean, given the way it's mocking the conventions, oh, look, she's going to do a superhero jump and a superhero landing and all that kind of stuff. So why, when you know, we have a scene in a strip club, you know, one of the most hackneyed and tired cliches in the entire action film arena, and nothing is said? How can you let that cliche go by and not make some remark about it? Or for that matter, the ethnic stereotype of the cab driver, which is just played for laughs, which I have to say stood out the more strongly for me because an hour after seeing the film, I saw the episode of Master of None, where they had addressed that kind of, stereotype in casting directly. So I guess those were moments where, it's like, why am I not hearing something? And especially, you know, when I see there are moments that were so sharp, like the timeline gag. And I guess just more generally, I think what would have worked, better yet for me, and, you know, if you're a little odd in you know, I'm probably accusing the film of not doing something that it had no intention of doing in the first place. So I guess this falls under the category of just a missed opportunity, which I feel it could have done something with. The voiceover, the fourth wall stuff, there's a lot of the time it's not really that different from any kind of wisecracking voiceover. There's so much there that could be done. There's a moment where it seems when he's Colossus thinks he's talking to him and says, "No, I'm talking to them," meaning us. And the idea, and correct me if I'm wrong, is this has happened in the comics where you know, Deadpool is aware that he's in a comic and you know, no one else gets that. And so I mean that there's a lot you could do with that. And so there's, it felt like there was an untapped wealth, with regards to the fourth wall that speaks to both the humor, stuff that could have been done that wasn't, but also just, in making the film even more pointed, than it was. I just wanted it to commit a little bit more to that.
Okay, that's fair. Any responses to that? Or do we want to maybe move to a different topic since we've been talking jokes for a bit?
We can go to a different topic?
Okay, so I'll just throw one out there to see what how people respond to it, which is, did you all notice that that a certain Game of Thrones former star is in this movie?
I don't watch Game of Thrones, so I didn't know.
Why are you on this show?
I don't know. You keep inviting me back.
There's more to fandom than Game of Thrones.
There is, yeah. So Ed Skrein was in the second season of Game of Thrones. He was the pretty boy assassin dude that whose name I cannot remember because I stopped watching the show. And he somewhat semi-famously quit the show because he wanted to have a movie career. And I believe this is the most high-profile movie he's done since, and I found him rather amusing, given that he's prefaced at the beginning as being, was it like a generic villain with a British accent or something?
A British villain.
Yeah, British villain, which of course he is, right? There's nothing else about his character. We don't really learn who Francis is, right? He just happens to have like taken this mutant serum whatever crap, and he's got like super strength that doesn't feel pain, and that's it. He's just British for the sake of being a stereotype, which I found amusing.
Yeah, actually with him, there's a thing I've been going back and forth trying to decide if this was a strength or a weakness in the film. The fact that whatever scheme he has seems to be completely futile. We never really, there's something about making an army of super mutant slaves, but we never see any of them. I guess what I like is the fact that Deadpool isn't out to get him because of that scheme. He doesn't care about that. He just wants him to fix his face. But that did make, that scene early in the film where we see him, some kind of arms deal going down. And that felt a little bit like the equivalent of Thor in the pond in Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
I didn't know why that was there. It didn't lead anywhere. Unless is that supposed to link up to X-Men Apocalypse, or was I missing something there?
I honestly have no idea.
I think if we take that reading that Mike was giving us before, where we think of it as Deadpool vision, he's a generic villain. And what do generic villains do? They're British, they sell illegal firearms, and they're up to weird shit in, like, creepy warehouses that have been abandoned. Those are kind of like the trifecta, right, of what any generic super villain is up to.
Yeah, because take the film chronologically, the plot is incredibly simple.
Yeah.
There's two fights and an origin.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a little bit of misdirection with it, because the thing at the end looks like a helicarrier from the Marvel continuity. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I assumed it was. I have to say, it kind of took me out of the film more than, maybe perhaps more than I was supposed to, because I was sitting there wondering about the legal machinations that had allowed them to respect the continuity of Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
But maybe that's the joke. It's here's this helicarrier, but that's not the same universe. So the context for which we would expect that to make sense doesn't exist here. So it's literally just a random helicarrier for no apparent reason.
Yeah, it didn't feel like a joke to me.
Oh, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah, because there's a fair amount of visual humor in the film. You know, the splatter of the guy falling onto the sign.
Yeah.
Deadpool's regrowing hand.
That's so creepy. Oh, God. Oh. Oh, he touches her face with it. Yeah.
I agree that the thing with the helicarrier may have been either miscalibrated as a joke, because an unspoken visual joke is really hard to land because you have to have the reference for it in something like this, because it's the serious foreground, funny background rule of comedy. You have to be paying attention for it to be funny.
Yeah, this was just puzzling.
That's a possibility. Yeah, I mean, it could be. Can we go back to talking about the creepy hand? Because I just got to say that the way in which this movie handles any references to any sort of sex act really just cracks me up constantly. And the hand is one of those great moments where I think before this we learned that we get that little flash of a scene where he stops and he says, "You weren't supposed to see that," where he's basically masturbating while holding a unicorn stuffed animal. Which is already weird. And then later, he's touching, what's her name, Blind Al, I guess?
Yeah.
With his creepy baby hand. And then he says he's going to go touch himself because it's going to be like a stranger. It's so creepy and it's gone. It's so great.
And the lead up to that, too, I think is a really good example of what Mike was talking about with the visual humor, because in the middle of a conversation about something else, we see him grab, you know, when he's put the Crocs on, and then he grabs the stuffed unicorn, the Kleenex, and the lotion. Right? Yeah. And the camera doesn't foreground it, right? I mean, he's just grabbing these things, but we got that glimpse earlier. We're probably starting to lose track of what he's saying and recoiling in horror at the objects he's just grabbed.
It's so
pretty
weird.
Much.
He's so weird. Oh gosh. There's so much sexy weirdness in this movie. But, you know, such is life. What do you
mean? Come on, Deadpool has, like, or Wade and his girlfriend have just one of the healthiest relationships I've ever seen in a comic book movie.
He is very giving to her.
They're both very giving to each other. Yep. They communicate. They're compatible.
And I love the joke about Lent.
Yes! Because
they're like, it's holiday and holiday and holiday, and, like, for the first three or so, you're like, okay, so they're having a lot of sex, and that they seem to be enjoying it. They get to the Lent joke, and it's like, oh, it's a multifaceted relationship. And that bit is a joke that compounds it. It breaks the repetition and progression rule while also giving other characterization and showing the other dimensions of the relationship. And it's like, it's a visual shift. It's a lighting shift. It's just, wow, that was good.
Yeah, that was nicely handled.
But, Mike, you wanted to actually bring up the romance, I believe.
Yeah, so as Rachel indicated, like, this is actually a solid Valentine's Day movie if you and your Valentine have compatibly ridiculous senses of humor that this film works for. Because so much of it is about Wade's relationship and his own, like, inadequacies and his fear about his own death and dragging Vanessa as his partner. Is that Vanessa?
I'm so bad.
Yeah, I think
the character played by Marina Baccarin. This is in the narration that he doesn't want to ruin her life with his cancer, and like the poignancy there, I thought was really effective, and I think it was an incredibly well designed counterpoint to the ridiculousness of the action storyline. That all of this was overcompensation and a distraction from what he was really caring about in terms of his relationship.
And I think the other thing, you know, the relationship had this, you know, this solid thing, and plus, you know, at the end, spoilers, but we already talked about stuff at the end, where it's kind of like, oh, can she accept that he's super scary looking now? Yeah, not as bad as he could be. And kind of, and also forgive him for leaving like he did. And I really liked that aspect of it.
Right, and that in reality, the thing that took more dealing with was the abandonment, not the ugliness.
Yes, because she was pissed, and she had every right to be.
Yeah, because
I'm sorry. It's the thing that he spent the whole damn movie worrying about too. Yeah. Well, go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry. I totally interrupted you. I'm a terrible person.
Yeah, that there's this expectation, especially in Hollywood movies, that you know in the end the beautiful people get together. So like Wei doesn't count as the beautiful people anymore. He's a hero. So like there's different axes, there's different narratives and like trope angles that say whether he does or doesn't kind of quote unquote get the girl. And it all comes down to her reaction, and that she gets to have that choice about how she gets to react to him. He does, like, his actions create their reunion, and he could have done it in a way better way. But she still gets the room, I feel, in terms of the narrative, to have her own reactions to things and to get to process things emotionally, which is really cool for me.
And her his happy ending is dependent not on the rescue, but on forgiveness.
Yes. And I also do want to mention that, like, I think part of the reason the comedy in the movie works so well is because it's got, like, that really solid emotional core, and it also does have that really incredibly dark aspect that is the acknowledgement of how fucking awful cancer is as a disease, which, you know, that's, I don't feel that's necessarily something that you get in a lot of movies where cancer comes up, because then dying in the hospital and, you know, it's the drama around that, but it's the focus on, you know, how got the person who is sick, and then it's awful for them, and it's also really hard on everyone they love.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to do a comparative reading, a direct comparison between this and, like, the film of A Fault in Our Stars. Like, because this is, in some ways, it's a sick-lit film. If we're comparing to the young adult kind of pseudo subgenre of sick lit, and because so much of it is about his reaction to it, and like I found out that a friend of mine who moved down to Brazil passed away of cancer just a few days after I saw the film, and he was a huge comics fan, and I hope that he got to see Deadpool beforehand, and just thinking about and hearing some of the reactions that fans with cancer or moviegoers with cancer have had to the film. Makes me very excited for people to have seen it and for it to be this alternative view of what it is to live with cancer and to have a relationship to it.
I assume you saw that same piece that I did. I can't remember now where it was, but just the other day, someone who has had cancer and gone through the treatments and saying that this movie nails the experience.
Yeah.
That it felt exactly right. I mean, certainly I know that I would take this narrative any day over something like the Notebook, whose romanticization of Alzheimer's disease makes me hate that movie probably more than any other yet made. So the cheerful bad taste of Deadpool actually feels much more considered. And carefully thought.
I don't know what else to say to that, given that I think I'm the only one on the podcast who's actually survived cancer.
So what was what about your take then?
It wasn't my experience, but only because I think I was so young, whereas he's like a full grown ass man. I think your experience is a little different when you're a little bit older, because you can't as easily fall back on your family. So it's just a little bit different. It certainly changes your humor, I'll tell you that much, because you either just wallow in despair about losing your hair, or you just laugh about it because it's hilarious when your mom pulls your hair out of the back of your head. without much effort. So that's kind of how I handle some of it. It's just laugh about it, because otherwise it's just really sad. But yeah, I also just don't like, I don't think I'll ever watch Fault in Our Stars, just because I don't like the kind of like cancer porn movie where it's just sort of like, let's watch this person wallow and suffer and die slow and painful for 2 hours. I'm good. I've lived that experience, except the dead part. I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. I don't need to see that. Yeah, I know what it's like. I'm good. So
you bought the t-shirt. You didn't want to buy the t-shirt, but you bought it anyway.
More like that someone, like, I was at the football game and one of those guys with the giant t-shirt shooting machine came out and shot it in my face and then yelled at me and then put it on me even though I didn't want to, and then, like, sprayed me with a hose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because fuck cancer.
Yeah, because fuck cancer. I still think I should be allowed to wear a shirt that says that in public.
I think you totally should.
You should, like, everybody should get a little card that's, like, just, this is permission. Like, it's fine. It's all good.
Yeah. If you would like to wear a shirt that says fuck cancer on it, you are allowed. Society has deemed this as appropriate. I'll say that I don't disagree with the interpretation of it. I think it's just different from my own experience just because of where I was at the time. So
that totally makes sense.
So, but I mean, I'm glad that it, like, once you were telling the story about people who've watched this and have received something from it because it matches with their experience. I think that's really awesome. I don't know if that's their intent with this, but if that's the case, clearly they hit the sweet spot for some people. Which has got to be tough to do as a writer / director / actor to hit that. Especially for a film like Deadpool, where we wouldn't expect it to take on something like cancer, except as just, like, maybe a funny joke, right? But that it actually, like, addresses it in a pretty... I mean, it doesn't spend a lot of time on it, but it certainly... It hits the emotional core, I think, of the terror that cancer is.
And it motivates so much of what follows.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting.
And I think, I was just going to say, I think part of the power of it is that it does hit it and then not necessarily moves on, but it doesn't feel the need to belabor the point.
Right. Because you just see them, instead of, you know, hitting it over and over and over, we just see what that does to their relationship. Right. And the worst part of that is actually that scene where they're sitting in the room and the doctor's telling him what he has and what his treatment options are. And he's looking at her while she's doing all of this, like, really optimistic, like, well, what about these, like, German treatments, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and the doctor telling her, like, it's probably kind of hopeless, and he's not really hearing it, right? It's clear he's not really hearing what they're saying. Like, it does, like, you could even interpret all of that as just, like, random shit he's made up just to kind of fill in that blank space, because all he's doing is he's looking at her and how desperate she is not to lose him, and you can see the pain on his face. He doesn't know what to do, which is why he leaves, right? That's basically the reason he leaves. He takes this shot in the dark and abandons her because I don't think he wants to see that look on her face anymore, if that makes sense. But anyway, Mike?
Yeah, because his humor in several different places to large and larger degrees, his humor is his escape. He uses his humor to sort of keep his sanity when he's being tortured. He uses humor to distance himself from the situation when Vanessa is trying to go through all those treatments, as you all have said, that his humor is as much his superpower as anything else. And that the way that he disassociates or kind of recontextualizes the world around him dictates so much of how the narrative goes, because he's rearranging the timeline to tell a certain story because of a certain intentionality that he has. And he's recontextualizing his relationship to things and to actions and to events to try to figure things out. But to actually fix his relationship, he can't just rearrange. He actually has to directly engage.
Yeah, that's a good way of thinking about it, Mike, yeah. Can we switch topics to something happy?
So, well, I have a question regarding its placement within the superhero genre generally. So we have yet another origin movie. And my understanding is that in the comics, Deadpool's origin is considerably fuzzier, right? That it's I read one thing saying he's kind of like the Joker in the Dark Knight. There's a whole bunch of different possible origins, and there's no definitive truth. Please correct me if I'm misinformed. But I guess the so there's also the fact that the film is obviously a gigantic success and is, relatively speaking, standalone. And this connects to something that we were chatting about on Twitter. So I guess what I'm wondering about, though, is that, is it, so here's a film that given, if I'm correct, that his origins are fuzzy, that, it didn't have to be an origin story movie. Though, as we've just been discussing, what they did with that does work very well. Is it possible for us to have a standalone superhero movie that is not an origin tale?
I think we'd need some other narrative backbone or axis along which to understand the lead's motivations, because that's so frequently the character's motivations are stapled to their origin plot. That, like, Tony Stark becomes Iron Man because he has guilt and daddy issues and he had a near-death experience and go. And so many of these other heroes, like, a lot of the superhero origins, their motivation is created through the thrust of their origin story. You know, Superman, yeah. Peter Parker, Batman. You'd probably want a character who isn't as always already bound to that. Like, I think Wonder Woman, you don't need to do an origin, because like Deadpool, her origin is fuzzy and has been retconned several times. I think the character is established enough that you could just start with Wonder Woman steps into man's world and plot.
But I bet we won't get that.
Probably not. Looks like they're doing World War I for the Gal Gadot film following Man of Steel.
I mean, the closest thing I can think of recently would probably be The Dark Knight, which, yeah, though it does follow from Batman Begins, does stand on its own, as a film. And, I mean, after all, I mean, in the comics, we have, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of issues, and we're not getting the origin stories over and over and over and over and over again for all those hundreds of issues. So, maybe it's not something that's possible in films, or is it? It's requiring an imaginative shift that we just aren't seeing happening. Even in a film where we could have had that.
I think you're probably that latter, because even in the comics, I mean, they're rebooting their universes like almost every year now. I mean, they're constantly retelling these stories. Sometimes the same exact way, they just like change a character's hat. It's something in the comics, and I think is something that just bleeds over into the films, that we have to tell the origin. The good news about the films is, given how long it takes to make a damn movie, we probably won't get a rebooted Marvel Universe anytime soon, right? So we won't see, you know, Captain America have his origin told yet again and have a different, slightly varied version of it.
We're slouching towards incomprehensible density, though.
After Phase 3, I would expect recasts and some reboots for Marvel Cinematic. DC is trying to steal so many marches on Marvel on the cinematic side. Not having seen Dawn of Justice yet, it's hard to say exactly how well that's going to go. But yeah, because the comic reboots are coming so fast, and it seems like both Marvel and DC are very actively trying to figure out how to negotiate between this broadening audience, or the acceptance of a broadening audience in the comics universe, and shoring up their profit margins, while independent publishers like Image, IDW, Boom, and so on and so forth are making great strides. And because both Marvel and DC are now owned by megacorps, the comics universes are being viewed, I think, increasingly as IP farms. So decisions about creative direction are coming not only from the comic side to the other media, but probably from other media and top level like C-suites down into comics. So I think the relationships have also really changed, which then probably means that some of these other calculi, the other calculus in terms of reboots and things have changed.
Yeah, I agree. I agree there. I don't know if we'd get at some point we're going to get reboots. So long as comic movies make the money, they're going to reboot at some point. But my guess is they're going to do like a super soft reboot where they actually legit kill off characters or retire characters and just replace them with new characters. Characters whose origins we don't need because we already have them. So like the Winter Soldier in the comics, he becomes Captain America at one point. And then they just kill Evans. And maybe in the movies, they actually full on kill him. He doesn't come back. I mean, not Evans, I'm sorry.
I'm hoping they're... I'm hoping they're going to just kill Steve Rogers and leave Chris Evans alive.
They're taking their art really
seriously.
That
would be a little hard. Yeah.
Sorry, Evans, your contract is up.
Bam. He'll never get to direct.
Oh, no. Well, Tom Hiddleston does like making jokes about the Marvel Sniper Squad when you're getting interviewed and you're not supposed to say spoilers.
Right.
Maybe. Maybe it's a thing.
Maybe it could be a thing. Well, anyway, so we do need to start closing out, so that means final thoughts and grades. So we'll start with you, Rachel. What are the last things you have to say, and what would you give this for a grade?
All I can really say is I love this movie, and I'm looking forward to owning it on Blu-ray, and honestly, even I have started having some superhero fatigue. Like, I did not bother seeing the last Spider-Man movie, because I don't even give a crap, and etc. But this movie, I was actually pretty excited to see, and it's one of the few movies that's really lived up to the hype that was around it. I felt it was well-deserved, and I loved it, and it was funny, except for that one damn joke, but maybe next time. Next time, Deadpool. And so, I mean, it was everything that I wanted it to be and more. I gotta give it an A.
Wow. All right. High praise. All right, David, what about you? Final thoughts and grade.
I mean, you know, obviously I had some reservations. I wish it had gone further than it did, but what it did do was highly entertaining and gave me the most genuine pleasure I've had at a superhero film in quite some time. So I'm going to give it a B+.
All right, not bad. All right, Mike, you go.
Yeah, so when I was watching the film and coming out of it, while watching it, I thought it was a B. Coming out, it's like maybe B+. Getting to talk about it with people and hearing these other interpretations and getting to really spend time thinking about how many things that it did and the different interpretations and different angles that it worked versus what I've come to expect from a superhero film, I'm going to upgrade it to an A-.
All right, that's fair enough. I would say I'm pretty close on that front. I really enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun. Had some issues, some quibbles. Some things that didn't stick out to me at the time, but overall, it's just so much fun to watch, and I would go again. I feel kind of jealous that Rachel got to see it twice. You're a jerk. God,
I regret nothing. You maximum regret effort, nothing. Duke.
Yeah, so I would also give it an A-. I think it's really solid, and I will say that because I was looking forward to this, and this is one of those films that for me was like my big looking forward to film, like Civil War and all that, those are like the obvious choices. This one is the one where it's like, man, I hope this really is really good, and I came out utterly satisfied, and that is a big feat because I'm a pretentious turd. So yeah, that's it, we're done. Ooh. We did it, guys. We made it. Yeah,
I want to go see the movie. Woo! Again, but it's too late.
Yep,
I have to go to bed.
Yep, I gotta go to the gym. So, on that note,
tomorrow's another day, Scarlet.
If you'd like to support this show, you can easily do so by going to patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. Give us like $8 billion if you have it, or like $1. That's cool too. We don't discriminate against large donations. However, if, you know, like Bill Gates wants to give us like half his wealth, that's cool. Like, I'm game with that.
We could do a lot of very cool things with that much money.
We could fix America.
Think of how many, like, translations of everything we could do.
We would just translate all of it, Mike.
All of the world SF.
Like, We just, no, everything. Everything would be translated. We would just, like, I don't know how we would do it, but somehow it would happen.
We buy Alphabet. Yes. And then translate all of everything for everybody.
Exactly.
Cool, let's do it.
Let's do it. It'll be a world where everyone speaks one language, which doesn't sound like one language to anybody, but we all understand it.
Everybody gets to understand every language.
Right.
But you get to speak your own.
Why don't we just make a babblefish?
All right, and now we've done enough of a digression to honor Deadpool.
All right. On that note, awkward ending and scene. Our intro and outro music comes from Nocturnia by Psychedelic Pedestrian. You can find out more about them on freemusicarchive.org, including the full version of the song. We obviously made some edits to the song, including sound effects and, of course, shortening the length. You can also support us by going to patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. If you'd like to send us a suggestion, you can do so at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com. You can also go to our website, skiffyandfanty.com, and check out the little suggested topic form at the top there. You can also just send us emails. You can also find us on Twitter at skiffyandfanty or on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Just search for us on there. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next time.